Pilots have seen things most people will only dream of. Your host, Jeff Lively, has had his fair share of time in the sky and has plenty of stories to tell. Here on Leaders of Aviation, we're speaking with others in the aviation industry to get their insight and inspiration. Together, we'll gain knowledge to pursue our goals. Life's a journey. Enjoy the flight.
What is going on, guys? This is Jeff, your host for the Leaders of Aviation podcast. I hope you are having a fantastic day. In this episode, I interview my good friend and flight instructor, Brandon Melendez. We had a wonderful time recording this episode. Really, I know that this episode is going to bring you value. It's going to be very inspiring as well. Brandon is a CFII. I credit him with helping me get my instrument rating. He was extremely instrumental in me studying and helping me get that rating. So, Brandon has accomplished a lot in his very short aviation career, as you will come to find out. So in this recording, it originally was recorded through a Facebook group. So that's why the audio might sound a little bit different today. But nonetheless, it is still a wonderful episode, and I know that you are going to enjoy it. So now that we have 91-103 our way through the first bit here, let's go ahead and take off into this episode.
It says adding, connecting. There we go. Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Good. How are you?
Good to see you, man. Great talking.
It's good to see you. How's everything? How's your Sunday going?
Very, very good. Thank God. It's been a long week, but I'm glad to be spending it at home. Just been cleaning around, being like a normal human that's on the ground and not in the air.
For sure, absolutely. And I'm excited to get into all of that, especially with what you're doing now. But before we even get to that, I want to start at the very beginning. Well, first, I'm going to introduce you. So for everyone that doesn't know, this is Brandon Melendez. We met while I was doing a training up at American Flyers up in Addison, Texas. And through that, we developed a really good relationship. And Brandon is, if I can make him my personal CFI, he would be my personal CFI, but that would be selfish on me. So anyway, without further ado, Brandon, thank you for joining us today, man. And I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. It's very good to be
here. Awesome. All right. So take us back to New York, New York. You're growing up, and just tell us a little bit about how you grew up and how you came to high school.
Okay. So I grew up in Queens, New York, and aviation was never really in my family. Never had parents that were involved in aviation, so it kind of fell upon me through the video release. But I play Ace Combat or Microsoft Flight Simulator, very, very popular, love it. If I had my computer, I'd be playing that right now. So, but I knew at a young age I wanted to fly, and my grandpa had mentioned, like, when it was time for me to start looking into high schools and apply. He had mentioned, he's like, hey, you know, there's an aviation high school in Long Island City, Queens. You should look into that. And I was like, okay, well, I had this big fat book of high schools in New York City, and I looked at it, and it just seemed like the perfect place because it offered not only your regular academics for high school, but it offered an AMP program. Which, for those that don't know, that's your airframe and power plant license, which allows you to be an aircraft mechanic. So that was very interesting for me. Of course, my goal was to be a pilot, and I went in knowing, like, okay, well, this isn't necessarily a flight school, but hey, let me immerse myself in aviation at this young age, you know, as a ninth grader. You walk into this high school and there's a hangar with old, you know, a Mooney, some SNJs, T-6 Texans, like a bunch of various old different airplanes and jet engines that you can mess around with and work on. So it was really, really exciting. So if anybody's watching and you're in the New York area and maybe you're looking into a high school, Aviation High School is a super great program. A lot of people in the aviation industry has actually come from there. The school, if I remember correctly, each year they have about 2,900 students, and each class has about 600 students. So about 3,000 students in the building every year. And it's a big school. And I will tell you that because it is a public school, it is actually all free. So the only thing you have to pay for is your, we'd say the check ride, but the FAA airframe and paraplant exams. And you can walk out of high school with your AMP, which is exactly what I did. And I began my career from there.
Very cool. So with this aviation high school, like, you know, I did not have the, the opportunity to attend an aviation high school. Is it strictly only aviation courses, or like, is there some mixed in science, math courses? Like, how would a student curriculum look like?
Okay, so good question, because so every year, like from freshman to sophomore year, your schedule will change. Freshman year is very light, where it's mostly just academics like English, math, history, science. So every year you will have all your standard academics. That is a must. You know, the purpose of high school is to get your general high school diploma. However, aviation high school incorporates aviation shop classes for your AMP degree. So back in high school, you know, we kind of looked at this in a bad way, because, you know, we'd have extra long days. We'd have our regular courses. Plus, on top of that, we have to stay an extra hour, 2 hours, maybe 3 hours, because we had to go to welding or wood class or metal or jet engines or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, it's both, to answer your question. It's both.
And is there like, like sports, you know, can students still participate in basketball, soccer, whatever that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, that school was great because as much of a not normal high school experience it was, you did get your sports, your physical education. They had a ton of clubs, which was great. Like track team, I was in the track team. You have basketball, baseball, soccer. You had a bunch of like other non-sport clubs, like, you know, the National Honor Society, the chess club, math club. So you had a very good wide variety of groups that you can socialize in. So it was, honestly, looking back into it, it was such a great experience. Although it was difficult attending all those classes and studying for all those exams and being quote unquote what we would say FAA. Meaning we're pretty much maintaining the standard to be passing our FAA classes. It was hard, but, you know, looking back at it, it was really a good time. A lot of stuff going on, but really a good
time.
Wow,
I mean, it essentially sounds like college.
it was kind of like a college. I mean, I will admit, you know, the work ethic that you develop from going to aviation high school prepares you for college. Because I remember going to college and I would get, you know, essays and assignments and stuff, and, you know, my classmates would kind of complain like, oh my god, this is a lot of work. And then for me, I'm like, really? Like, I've been doing this for 4 years already.
Exactly. Wow. I know I said I didn't have the opportunity, but I don't know if I would have survived. So anyway,
one thing is that school, you know, not many people have a passion for aviation. And the people that do, though, and that immerse themselves in an environment like that, they do so well. Like, I did very well in my shop classes just because I just loved being able to sit there and somebody explain to me how a jet engine works and like, okay, this is how the fuel metering system of the jet engine works. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I can't believe I'm learning this stuff. I guess it's like a nerd moment, but I mean, for people that love aviation, we're all nerds. We just
for sure. No, I mean, yeah, I think, it's one thing that if I could have attended the aviation high school, I for sure would have taken that opportunity. But anyway, okay, so you graduate high school. You have your A&P at the age of 18?
Yeah,
17, 18. Yeah. Okay, cool. So what was next on your radar?
Okay, so aviation high school has a fifth year of high school. High school is normally four. The fifth year is to get your second rating, which is your power plant. So you get one at the end of the fourth year and then another at the end of the fifth. During my fifth year, I was getting my power plant license while also interning at JetBlue Airways in JFK Airport. So it was me and a couple other guys, and we would show up to the hangar and, you know, assist. And I remember it was our last day of that internship. And I had a mechanic, you know, he got all emotional because we were all leaving. It was our last day. And he was like telling us like, hey, apply everywhere. You don't know where you're going to be in 6 months. Apply to the fire department, the police department, apply to sanitation, all these airlines, apply to everywhere because you just never know where you're going to be. So, you know, I kind of took that and I didn't apply to the fire department or police department because I was just too afraid that they would call me and I'd be like, oh man, like, I'm going to be a cop now. I applied to every airline. Like, I ideally, at the time, I wanted to work for JetBlue, but I just didn't know how I was going to work with college starting next year. So I just applied to, you know, I applied to Delta, United, American, Southwest, for all jobs, mechanic, ramp, gate agent. I applied to everything. And I actually got called by Delta Airlines, which was not on my scope, really. It really wasn't on my scope. Although I did know it was a great airline. It was large and, you know, everybody wanted to be the Delta interns. So I got an interview. I passed the process and I actually got the call that they had wanted to hire me as a support mechanic. So I'll explain what that is in a bit. They called me the same day I had picked up my diploma after I graduated, which was amazing. Like, oh my God, like, this is great. I graduated high school and now I have a job offer at Delta Airlines. Like, this is amazing. This is the aviation high school dream, let's say. So I got hired as an aircraft support mechanic, which is pretty, so you can think of the top level of aircraft mechanic is, you know, a lead mechanic or a manager, but, you know, you have your lead mechanic, which pretty much manages a group of guys, and then you have your aircraft mechanic, and then at Delta, we have a support mechanic, which is kind of like the person who will assist other mechanics, or he does a certain role. So my role was to keep track of tools and make sure the tool shed was all in check because, you know, the FAA is very, very strict about tooling that we use on aircraft. It has to be calibrated and inspected every certain amount of months or so. So we had to, so that was my role into Delta, and that was my entry. And the reason why I got hired as a support mechanic first was because I had my power plant license exam scheduled in November of that year, so I only had one license. But they had hired me with the intention of, hey, you know, we're going to keep you as a support mechanic for now. You know, get your feet wet, get some experience, and once November comes, you know, hopefully everything goes well. You pass your test, which I did, thankfully. You know, we'll keep an eye out for you to pretty much upgrade to aircraft mechanic, which a year later I did. So yeah,
that's cool. That's so awesome. So wow, I mean, the day you got your diploma, there you go. Hey, guess what? You're hired. and rocking and rolling out. So talk a little bit about, you know, from going to New York to, I assume you had to go out of state with Delta. So what was that transition like?
Oh my God, let me tell you, that was probably one of the most exciting times of my life. So that, I guess I got a little spoiled because everybody's first ever airline job is going to be so exciting, whether it's a pilot or another role, because more than likely your company will send you to their HQ. So for me, Delta sent me to Atlanta, and this was my first ever time traveling really on my own. Never been to Atlanta. I'm going for this big time, you know, Delta Airlines. I'm like, oh my God, this is exciting. So I remember going to the airport that day. I flew on a Delta MD-88. Okay. If you guys, it was not, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but those are now retired. But I just remember flying.
Bro, you're so old.
Oh man, I just remember flying into Atlanta, being so excited. Like, oh my God, this is going to be the start of something. Who knows? Like, what it's going to lead to. And it wasn't until the first week where I started realizing the culture of Delta Airlines and realizing how great of a company it was and how it takes care of its people. Where I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, maybe I did want JetBlue at the time, but this is amazing. Like, this is fantastic. And I got to tour their museum. So my first airline job was a mechanic, and I know eventually I'm working to be an airline pilot. And I know in the future, you know, whatever airline I end up going to, I'll have that same experience. But for those out there that are watching and maybe have not gotten their first airline job yet, just know that first day where you're at the airport at your home, you know, whether you're from New York or Texas, you know, you're at DFW or LaGuardia boarding your flight to go to first day, that's thrilling. It's a really exciting feeling. I'll never forget it.
That's awesome. So 18 years old, A&P, going to Atlanta. Well, I know you, after a year, you became that fully licensed mechanic living in Atlanta. So how long did you work there and with Delta, and what was your next move?
Well, actually, Atlanta was only temporary. Atlanta was only 2 weeks when I started my training, and then they sent me back to LaGuardia. That was my base. So I did all my work in LaGuardia, but the first 2 weeks, which is what we call in-doc, where you get your feet wet, get all your documents handled, and you get introduced to the company and all that stuff, set up all your accounts, your insurance and all that stuff, that was all in Atlanta. But I had done all my work at home in New York, so my first ever experience living in another state, like fully living in another state, was actually when I moved here to Texas.
Oh, cool. So when you went back to LaGuardia, is that typical? Like, did you just get lucky, or did you like have to put in a bid for that base?
No, actually, when it comes to being an aircraft mechanic, whatever job you apply to is where you're going to be. So the position I applied for was in LaGuardia. So I already knew that my base, my reporting station would be LaGuardia. For a pilot, it's different. For a pilot, you get hired, and once you complete your training, it's kind of like, okay, we got two slots here, two slots there, you know, you guys pick your pick and we'll go by seniority or whatever it goes.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, awesome. So yeah. Now you're working at LaGuardia, and I think during that time frame, that's when you began your flight training, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, I started flight training throughout high school, so a little bit before Delta, but it was very once in a blue kind of thing where, you know, I would, whatever money I'd had left over, I'd buy myself an hour of a flight lesson. So in high school, I would fly maybe about, you know, 1 to 2 hours every 2 weeks or so. So it really wasn't much. But once I did start Delta and I started making myself some good money, and I was living at home still, living with mom, I was able to actually afford to fly more, and that's when my flight training got really rapid, and also time building as well.
Tell us, where did you fly? What was your flight school, and you know what, from private through you know what, all your ratings?
So starting off with my private pilot training, I actually had my own individual instructor. His name was Pat O'Toole. He owns a Piper Archer out in Republic Airport, Farmingdale. The identifier is Foxtrot Romeo Golf. It's out in the middle of Long Island, and it's just underneath the New York Class Bravo. So very cool airport, very fun airport. That airport will always have a place in my heart, and so will the Piper Archer that I trained in. And he was a cool guy. He was an older guy. He trained me. I would pay him by the hour. I think when I was training, a flight would be $180 an hour. So that's how much I would pay. And then it took a while because, like I said, I started that in high school. And it took me and I'm going to mention this because I think if I could pass this on to everybody that I come across, I think it'd be a fair share, a good piece of advice. So I was sort of impatient, and I wanted to do my flight training ASAP, but I didn't have the money. So I would just pay piecemeal, little by little, and I would fly, like I said, 1 to 2 hours every 2 weeks. That was actually not necessarily the most efficient way to complete my training. I'm going to be honest, I had completed my private pilot training at about 89 hours, when meanwhile the national average is about 60, 65. Now, there's nothing wrong. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with anybody getting their private pilot license at 90. Some people get it at 40. Some people get it at, 100. It's fine. But I probably could have gotten my license a little bit sooner with less hours and costing me less money if I had maybe waited, saved, or maybe taken out a loan for flight training. So I just wanted to mention that there because that's just a piece of advice that if I could probably go back and do something and change, I might have changed that. But anyways, the private pilot training, that was really fun. And then after your private pilot training, it comes the instrument rating, which requires, I believe it's 50 hours of cross-country PIC. And when you finish your private pilot, you come out with about 5 to 10 cross-country PIC, depending on how much what you do on your own time or what you do with your practice. So I believe when I finished private pilot, I had only 10. So I had 40 hours of cross-country time to build. So around this time, I had gotten hired by Delta, and I would just take a bunch of friends, people, and a lot of people would tell their friends, and they'd be like, hey, I know this guy named Brandon, he flies. And I would, I would take people, and we'd split the cost, because obviously as a private pilot, you have to share the pro rata share rate. Can't really have somebody pay for your hours at that time yet. So that to me was actually one of the most enjoyable times of my aviation career, because if you just think about it, you're a fresh private pilot, life is good. You just got your license and you're flying around, and now I'm adding people to the plane where it's not my instructor sitting next to me, telling me what to do or saying that my landing sucked. People here that are just willing to enjoy the ride and share that beautiful aviation experience. So I would fly. So the one thing about Long Island in the Northeast is that there are a ton of cool airports to fly into, and that have aviation restaurants and stuff. So we would always go out there. I would always do the New York City Skyline SFRA, or we just call it the Hudson River Tour. And that was really fun, where you pretty much fly in between a little tiny Class Bravo exclusion, where you can actually fly VFR through the Hudson River, look out to your right or your left, depending on which way you're going, and you can see the New York City skyline. It was beautiful. So a lot of fun time building moments at that phase. And I'll admit, I didn't really get carried away with that time building phase. I was actually at the time just also saving simultaneously so that, when it came time for my instrument rating, I wasn't gonna make that mistake of like, okay, I'm gonna pay you $200 for 1 hour here, and then, you know, then it's gonna take me a year to get my instrument rating. I did not want that. So I spent about a good year working hard at Delta, and again, flying with friends every now and then to keep current, build my time. And then once I determined I had the funds, I'm like, okay, great, I think I can actually afford this. I was ready to go. I went to another flight school in Farmingdale called Global Aviation. And I went to them because they were a slightly bigger school. They had a fleet of multiple Piper Warriors, and they had multiple flight instructors. So the availability was there. And that is something that I needed at the time because working at Delta had a very busy schedule. From there, I got my instrument rating in 3 months, which is, if you think about it, not that bad. There are some very fast-paced instrument courses, but if you're doing it Part 61, which is what I did, 3 months is considerably not that bad. Once instrument was done, next, commercial. Boom. I got commercial done in 2 months. And also, by the way, with your commercial pilot license, you need 250 hours to, you know, get your commercial pilot license. By then, I had already done most of my flight time building because during the period of saving money, I was flying with a lot of people. I would fill the plane up with three other people, and we'd split it $40 an hour, and it worked out great. And of course, sometimes I'd fly by myself just because there's nothing also more special than just going up by yourself and feeling the peace of being up in the sky and looking around, and it's nice and quiet. Commercial was done. And then I didn't get my multi after my commercial single. I actually went straight for CFI because I believe I was doing research, or I was just talking around, and people would say, hey, the CFI check ride is just basically your commercial on the right seat, plus of course the very brolic oral that you have to take. I'm like, you know what, because my single engine pilot skills are very sharp right now, let me go straight for CFI. So I knew CFI was going to be a lot. I needed structure. I needed a program, because if not, if I was going to self-study, I was just afraid of missing information, or not knowing, like, you know, showing up to the check ride, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm ready for this. And meanwhile, I'm not. I missed a whole section of the PTS, which I'll mention in a bit. So I had research programs, CFI academies and stuff, and I came across American Flyers. They were very, you know, they're very, very popular, and they're very well known for their 30-day CFI CFII academy. And I thought 30 days was wonderful. 30 day, because there are also other programs that offer 10-day CFI or 14-day CFI. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, I don't know if I could do that in 10, 14 days. Like, I don't even know what that feels like. And I don't want to be a CFI in 10 days because I don't want to get that instructor certificate, have it all in my brain, and then, like, you know, next thing you know, I show up with a student, the real deal. I'm like, oh man, it only took me 10 days to get my CFI. I wanted to do a program that was at least 30 days so that I can kind of have time to get used to it, learn, and have it settle in my head so that I'm actually ready to teach. So I went with American Flyers at their Addison, Texas location in Dallas. And man, that was probably one of the best decisions I've ever made, because I never been to Texas. didn't know anything about Dallas, didn't know anything about, you know, Texas and in the Northeast, you know, we just have all these little stereotypes about Texas. And I'm like, man, what could it be? You know, probably a random city in the middle of the plains. But man, when I first got to Dallas, I really hated it because everything would close so early, and like I would find myself like hungry at 9 p.m. or I would find myself needing a rental car because I think I landed late that day, and all the rental car places were closed. And I'm like, wait, I had a reservation. Like, why? You know, I'm sorry, my flight landed late, but why are you closed? Like, you knew I was coming. You know, it's your typical mentality where everything has to be 24 hours for you. Anyways, I don't know. Spending time, though, in Dallas, like, I actually fell in deep love with the state, with the city, so much that I actually moved here. I now live in Dallas. And on top of that, the CFI program at American Flyers was actually really phenomenal. I had great instructors, really, really great instructors. They became good friends of mine, and I had the pleasure of eventually working with them eventually after I got my CFI. But a little bit more about the program. If I recall, it is structured where 2 weeks is dedicated for your CFI, and then the other 2 weeks is dedicated for your CFII. However, it's really awesome because if you had struggled a lot in your CFI training, they have the flexibility of catering your last 2 weeks to help you more with the CFI initial training, because the CFII is really just an add-on. And though it is just probably as difficult, the main challenge is that CFI initial check ride, whether it's your II or your CFI airplane. Now, in short, the CFI program at American Flyers was really, I'll just say that it was just all day nonstop aviation. We wake up early. If I remember, I think we would start class at 7 a.m., I believe, or 8 a.m. I think it was 7 a.m. So I'd wake up at 6. I would drive to Addison Airport. We would have class from like 7 to 11 or 7 to 12. And then in the afternoon, we would go flying. And if we weren't flying, you'd spend that time going home developing your CFI binder. The CFI binder is a huge binder because in order to become a CFI, there's a thing that we follow called the PTS. Like, with every rating that you can get, you have your PTS or your ACS, depending on which rating it is. The PTS tells you, okay, you need to be prepared to teach human factors or aerodynamics, this and that. And, you know, with all the topics came subtopics. And our instructors at American Flyers made us hand make our lesson plans from scratch with each and every topic. Now, I am truly thankful for that because I was actually able to look into all this information, write it down, organize the lesson plans in the way that I would comprehend them, so that when it came time for my check ride, not only did I actually look and read through the material, but I also organized the lesson plans where it's like, hey, you know, the examiner just asked me this and that. Oh, I know where that is in my lesson plan. Let me just look at it real quick. Because obviously there's also the option to buy your lesson plans. Was initially I was told like, oh, you should just buy your lesson plans. And before I even went to American Flyers, I had bought, I forgot what it was called, but I bought the lesson plans online. I never used them because going to the program, they just pretty much pushed you to make your own. And I wouldn't have done it any other way. That was honestly the best thing that you could have done for your CFI training. So long story short, with the CFI program at American Flyers, I highly, highly recommend it. The instructors are great. I believe I haven't been there in a while, but you know, there might be a new set of instructors, but overall that program they take pride in. And from a student's perspective, or a former student, it was really, really great. I passed both my check rides the first time, which was great, a blessing, because we all know that the CFI check ride is probably one of the hardest ones that are out there. So yeah, and then after CFI, CFII training, went back to New York for a little bit.
Excuse me. No, you're fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. So I will ask a question. So from the time that you moved from New York, you came down to Texas, you started doing your training with American Flyers for the CFI, CFII. What did it look like with Delta? Like, were you still working? Was it just more so of, hey, I'm here for 30 days type of thing, temporary Airbnb, go back to New York?
Oh, good question. Very good question. So that was a very interesting thing to do because Delta is a full-time job. So you're supposed to work 40 hours a week. So I had to somehow secure 30 days off.
Wow.
So I did. Is I knew I had this coming, so I had saved up a lot of we would call it PPT, which is a paid personal time or personal paid time off. So I would save PPT. I would have what we call holidays, and pretty much I would rack up days off. And I knew I had this coming, so I remember I applied as many days off as I could. I took vacation time and all that good stuff. And then on top of that, we had to do, we had this option where we can do what we call a shift swap, which is pretty much we can get another mechanic or another employee to work for us, which is great. You know, we can pretty much give them our shift and we would have the day off. We don't get paid for that, but it's totally fine because I had that option, I was actually able to secure the full 30 days off.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, yeah, I was just, you know, I'm sure some people would be like, so what did Delta do? Anyway, so now you've completed your trip. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that is a good question, and I was meaning to mention that, but the CFI Academy, there's just so much to say about it, so I got a little sidetracked, but I was still working for Delta at the time. It was a little shaky because when you sign up for the American Flyer CFI Academy, they actually give you a set of days. Like, okay, we're going to start November 3rd and it's going to end on November 29th or whatever day. I think mine started in late November and it ended in late December. I had just barely managed to get the 30 days off. Actually, no, I actually got the 30 days off just to the point where the last day I had to fly back home, like right after graduation at work the next day. Man, that was a tiring day, but yeah, so it managed. So I guess from that, we can just say like, you know, sometimes it's very like when you're working and also doing flight training, just try your best to explore all options in securing the time off because you do need time off to do flight training. And of course, worst case scenario, you could also do CFI training piecemeal, little by little. That'll take longer, but you know, that option is always there.
Sure. All right. So now yeah. CFII, headed back to New York, work the next day. Mm-hmm. But you're like, so I'm sure the thoughts that you started to have were, man, I really want to start flying. I like doing maintenance, but at the same time, I'm trying to build my hours, get to be an airline pilot. So talk a little bit about how that transition happened to where you were working on maintenance and then you started working full time flight instructing.
Oh man, that was probably the hardest decisions to make. though I had mentioned earlier, Delta was probably one of the best things to ever happen to me in my life, the best feelings. But then with that came one of the hardest decisions of my life, which was, I like to call it jumping off the cliff, right? That's what it felt like. Here I am, full aircraft mechanic. I was about 4 years in, you know, making good pay, secure job, or quote unquote secure. We didn't know what was coming after that. Talking about COVID. Yeah. And then I had my CFI rating. So at first I tried to juggle the two. So I was working afternoon shift at Delta, which is 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. So I had all my mornings free. So sometimes I got hired by a flight school out in Farmingdale. They were a small outfit and had some students. So I flew, I would fly about 30 to 40, I would just say 30 hours a month, really. And it wasn't the flight school's fault. It was me not being available. I had to report to LaGuardia 5 days a week. And mind you, I had already just burned off 30 days worth of vacation time, holidays, swaps, or whatever you want to call it. I had used it pretty much all my time. So I had to be at Delta 5 days a week and also full. Now, I had a lot of mentors at the time, or I still have mentors, but my mentors at the time had, you know, mentioned to me that, Brandon, like, you got your CFI, you got your CFII, you know, how are you doing with your flying? Oh, you know, I'm flying, but, you know, I'm really flying like 20, 30 hours a month. And they're like, you need to be flying 60, 70, 80 hours a month, 100 hours a month. And I knew it was possible because my old instructors, they would fly 80 to 100 hours a month. And I'm like, man, like, at this rate, at 30 hours a month, it's going to take me two and a half years just to get my 1,500 hours. And I know there are, you know, there's people that have gotten their whole 1,500 in a year and some change. So, so then I started thinking, like, okay, I have to make a decision here. Can I really make it work? Can I balance out this really good, high-paying job, or should I just jump off the cliff and bite the bullet? And I knew going in, I was like, all right, if I leave Delta, I'm gonna take a huge pay cut. I'm gonna leave this company that I have such a good relationship with, and I don't know how they're gonna take it. I don't know if I'm gonna be blacklisted. I don't know if they're gonna not take it very well that I resigned. But then I started to really think, okay, what mattered to me most? Being a mechanic or being a pilot? And it all just came down to what was going to make me happiest. And I'm like, you know what, Brandon? You're a pilot, you know? Yes, I was a mechanic first, but ever since I was a little kid, you know, I flew planes on flight simulator, and I just dreamed about being a pilot and having that uniform and having layovers in other cool cities. So I had typed up my resignation letter, and I said I had given in my resignation, my 2 weeks resignation letter, about the second week of March, just right before COVID really, really shut down the country. Now, I gave in my letter, and, you know, everybody knew, okay, Brandon's leaving, okay, cool. And then about a week later, my manager came in, because this is when COVID like just started. So just a quick side note, at this time as an aircraft mechanic, I would go and work on the aircraft when passengers would declane, and I would just ask the crew, like, oh, how'd the flight go? Oh, it was great, you know. And they would say, oh, it was a great flight, but, you know, there's only 50 people on my flight today. And like, as each day passed, it would be like, okay, only 50 people. Now 20 people were on my plane. Oh man, we only had 5 people on my plane. I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, yeah. What's going on where all of our flights are empty? And I didn't want to believe it. I would see on the news, COVID is, you know, attacking everybody, infecting everybody in Asia and in Europe, and and then it had just started coming into the United States. And then my manager pulls me aside, and he's like, "Hey, Brandon, I have something for you." He's like, "I don't know, but I heard that Delta is going to start offering what we call leave of absences because people are canceling their flights. These flights are being empty. You know, Delta has to do something about it. Like, so what they're planning on doing is giving people leave of absences where you can be like, hey, you're still in the company, but you can take 3 months off and do whatever you want. You know, take 3 months off, stay home." So I'm like, okay. And then he's like, "Look, I can take this resignation letter," and it never happened. And I was like, "Okay, let's do that."
Wow.
It was the best decision ever because, quote unquote, technically, on paper, I never resigned. And that's a good thing because eventually I took a leave of absence at Delta. And then eventually they started offering severance packages where they'll actually pay you a certain amount of your annual salary. And I think they give you travel benefits for a year to officially leave the company, to officially resign, let's just say, or leave Delta. So I went that route, and it was and I chose that because I was flight instructing in Dallas, and I had already moved. I had settled in. I got an apartment. I had all my things here. Had I not done that, I would have had to report back to Delta once the leave of absence was over. The leave of absence would have only lasted me a maximum of 1 year or 12 months, which would have expired May of 2021, which was a few months ago. So had I not separated, I would have actually had to move all my stuff back to New York, find a flight instructor job again back in New York, and start kind of all over. And I knew in my head, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be done with my 1,500 hours until then. And even if I get done with my 1,500 hours, how can I possibly manage an airline regional job while working full-time as an aircraft mechanic? So I pretty much took the severance package, and I completely separated from Delta August of 2020. And I thought it couldn't have happened any better because I technically didn't resign. I left on good terms with the company. The company actually offered me to leave, and it was sort of like a, hey, like, I'll help you and you help me by leaving. So it just worked out. And then, so yeah, ever since then, I've just been flying full time. And I have to admit, I've never been happier. It is a little bit more stressful because during that phase where you are working towards your 1500, you know, the jobs don't necessarily pay as much. So I do miss getting those big old fancy Delta paychecks, but nothing beats showing up to work, getting in a plane, flying, defying gravity, and just saying like, wow, like, I'm going to pay for this. So,
man, that's awesome. So that's just incredible. So you get out of high school, you're debt free still. By the way, for everyone that is still asking, because it's high school, right? You start working, and then you start going, and you start your flight training, and then you complete your flight training. Now you're back in New York. Decision comes to a head. COVID kind of helps out the situation. You move back to Dallas. You're flight instructing full time, and then I guess with your current job that you have. Talk about how that came about and how you transitioned from flight instructing to I know you still flight instruct from time to time, but to doing what you do now.
Okay, yeah. So I flight instructed for American Flyers from May 2020 to early November of 2020.
I'm glad I got to meet you during that time period, by the way.
You, oh, I got
You are the reason I got my instrument. So you are awesome.
I'm happy about it. Yeah, that was such a rewarding moment. That was so much fun too. I remember that day. The first few months at American Flyers was great. I mean, COVID was just sort of beginning, so flight training was still kind of
pretty rapid.
Yeah, pretty much. There was plenty of students. It was pretty sufficient. So I would fly. I had a good amount of students. I had pretty full days. I'd make pretty decent paychecks where I could live, and life was great. And then around August is when me and all the other flight instructors were kind of thinking to ourselves, like, hey, like, all of our guys are, they have check rides coming up, and we don't really have many new students. So what's going to happen? And the writing was on the wall. Things were going to start slowing down. So, you know, because fortunately, all of our students were getting check rides and passing, and it was great seeing them succeed. But what really got us nervous was, okay, not many students are coming back to fill in those positions. We're like, okay, we need more students to teach. So around come September is when things started to really slow down. September wasn't bad. October, I think I had flown maybe 10 hours that I really didn't make much money at all. It was a really stressful time. So I remember at that point, I was like, oh man, like, I can't rely on this one job. I can't rely on this flight school. As great as it was working at American Flyers, and as much of it's probably not their fault, you know, COVID really affected a lot of the world, and a lot of businesses and industries. I had to take action. You know, I had to survive. I had to find income. So I had, thankfully, I had looked, you know, I have my AMP, so I had applied to a lot of AMP jobs. I had applied to several flight schools or pilot jobs, which nobody was really hiring. So that was kind of quiet and dead. And the company, Van Bortle, they're an aircraft dealership out in Arlington, Texas. They sell Cessna 182s and Cessna 206s and Columbia TTXs. I remember when I first moved to Dallas, I was in a gathering, and somebody, he was an airline pilot, and you know, I was just having a conversation with him, and he had mentioned to me, oh, you know, you ever hear of this company, Van Bortle? You know, they're really good. They need ferry pilots here and there. And, you know, you can fly Cessna 182s from Dallas to Florida or Dallas to California, wherever they need you. I'm like, okay, I'll keep that in mind. And then I remember one time actually leaving American Flyers. I was done with work. I had, ran into an older guy. He had dropped off his daughter for a flight training, and he was an American Airlines pilot. He was like telling me, he's like, hey, have you ever heard of Van Bortle? I used to be a ferry pilot for them. Like, I used to just, you know, go for fun. And man, it was great because, you know, we would fly 182s, and we'd go out to Florida, we'd go everywhere. And I'm like, man, like, that sounded like a pretty awesome way to build some flight time and a pretty awesome job. So I just remember at the time in October when I was looking for jobs, the website didn't have any apply here links or anything. No emails. It was very difficult. So I actually went on Facebook, and I just did a Facebook search, and I saw multiple posts, and I actually had come across an email of one of the managers or whatever. And so for those watching, there are a lot of pages like Lively Aviators or North Texas Aviators, and people post all the time, lots of opportunities. So I took that email, I shot my email out. They didn't get back to me until December of 2020. In the meantime, I was working at another company out of DFW as a mechanic working on CRJs. That was a quick little month or two just to keep myself afloat. But then December comes and I get this email, and I never check my email, but I don't know, I just checked my email and I saw a response and it said, "Hey, if you're interested in working, respond ASAP." And I was just like, "Oh," I'm like, "Who is this?" And then I saw Van Bordel. I was like, "Oh my God, that's such a great company. Like, I need this reply." I replied, I interviewed, I got checked out in the Cessna 206, which was a super fun plane to fly. And man, it was so awesome because I'm so used to flying flight school planes. You know, usually they're all run down, older. No. G1000, you were a G1000 guy, so it was fun flying with you. I showed up to this shiny new red Cessna 206 G1000 autopilot, all the bells and whistles, and I'm like, "You're checking me out on this thing? Like, I don't know if I can this." Got checked out, and that was the beginning of everything. I mean, I remember my first trip was to Florida, and that was really awesome.
Cool. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about your journeys, or I guess tell us your most favorite trip that you've taken so far.
Let me think, because there's a lot of amazing experiences that I've had. I would say one of the best trips I've had was, there's a lot. I would say one of the best trips I had was probably most recently. My chief pilot had assigned me a trip to New Jersey, Lincoln Park Airport, New Jersey. Now, my dad lives in New Jersey, and during COVID, we didn't really see each other for a long time. It was about over a year and a half that I didn't see my dad, and he wanted both of us to be vaccinated in order for us to see each other. And luckily, at the time, we were, you know, I'm vaccinated, he's vaccinated, the whole family is. So I got this trip, and I called my dad. I said, "Dad, you're not going to guess where I'm going for work this week." And he's like, "Where are you going?" I'm going to New Jersey. He's like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah." And the airport that I'm delivering a 182 to was only 20 minutes away from his house. So I remember flying this flight and landing in New Jersey, and my dad and my little sister were there waiting for me at the airport, and it was just one of the most happiest feelings that I've gotten in a while, because during COVID, a year and a half, man, I missed my dad. And you know, living here alone in Dallas, you know, my family's all in New York, and it was very difficult to even see them. It was very, that to me was probably one of my favorite trips, because I got to see my dad, and I got to see my dad's dog. He's a chocolate Labrador. It's such a fun dog. And it was just so rewarding, because it's like, man, like, I just got paid to fly a Cessna 182 from Dallas to New Jersey, and now I get to chill with my dad's dog. And I'm like, yeah.
Thanks for sharing that, man.
Yeah.
So, ferry pilot. And then I know, I guess you just recently, something big happened. So go ahead and share with us what happened.
Just crossed the 1,000-hour mark. I'm just under 1,100 now. And started doing my research. You know, it's about the time to start applying to regional airlines, right? There's never really a fine line as to when you should apply. Like, should I apply now? Should I wait till I get 1,500? And then all of my friends and my mentors were like, "You need to apply now. You need to apply yesterday. Like, just apply, apply, apply." And I'm like, "Oh, okay. I'll shoot my apps out." And so I shot my application out to SkyWest Airlines. Within maybe 5 days, I got a response saying that we'd like to interview you. So I'm like, oh man, okay, cool, interview time. I got myself a nice suit. I studied. There's a, for those of you that are preparing for your airline interviews, there's a good website called airlineinterviews.com, and they offer gouges of interviews where you can actually read people's experiences and help you study and prepare for what your interview is going to be like. So I studied. I made sure I studied my Jeppesen charts. I made sure I studied high-speed aerodynamics, and I felt like a student again. And honestly, I'm going to be honest, as a ferry pilot, we're not doing much instruction. So a lot of this information, because I'm not talking about it, because I'm not repeating it or teaching it, a lot of it kind of felt like it was like deep in the back of my head. So I'm like, oh my God, like, wait a minute, like, the IFR alternate rules, like, wait, what was that again? Like, I mean, I know you're supposed to know this stuff, but when you do it, it's like, okay, it just all comes, like, automatically like a computer. But when you're actually supposed to talk about it and be tested on it, it's like, oh, wait, what was that again? So I remember studying, and I'm like, oh, man, I got to really stay sharp. Now, I didn't completely lose it, but studying, and this experience actually made me realize, and you know, every pilot will have this moment, but you always have to stay sharp, because you just never know when you're going to get an airline interview. And also, when you're flying in the air, you know, regulations and all this knowledge that we do in flight, that we learn in flight training, is life-saving. It's literally life or death, so it's super important. But anyways, interviewed. And next day, I got called, and I got a conditional job offer. So I officially got offered by SkyWest Airlines to be a first officer for them on their CRJ fleet. So that's super exciting. My class date isn't until March of 2022 because they've just been doing so much hiring. And it actually works out in my favor because I have 400 hours more to build, and gives me plenty of time to build my flight time. And I could always give them a call and say, hey, got my 1500 hours, you know, can I get an earlier class date? And, you know, if they have space, they'll send me in. But yeah, so that's the good news that has happened.
That is awesome. Congratulations, brother. You so deserve it. I'm very happy for you. And I know that's a dream come true. So, and it's only, it, you know, it's funny. So let everyone know how old you are.
Yes. How old I am? Oh, okay. I'm 24 years old.
You've accomplished so much in your aviation career and journey, and it's only just beginning. And so I think this is, it's so hopeful. It's so inspiring for a whole bunch of young people, especially. And just to know that this option is out there, you know, and that, essentially, you came full circle, right? So, started mechanic, flight instructor. You've done your dues. You've done your time. You know, quote unquote. It, not necessarily bad. No one was expecting COVID, but you kept your head down. You kept working hard, and now you have that conditional job offer while you're ferrying pilots, and ferrying an aircraft. So, congratulations, man. I'm very excited for you, and I'm very blessed to know you.
Oh, Jeff, thank you so much, man. I appreciate those words. Let me tell you, sometimes it's hard when you're in this journey yourself. Sometimes we forget to self-reflect on our accomplishments. And, you know, when you told me, hey, you know, you're 24 years old and you've done all these things, I kind of forget. It's kind of like I turn around and I'm like, wait a minute, like, I was a mechanic, you know, I moved by myself to Dallas and I was an instructor, and then, you know, I worked on CRJs, and then I got another job as a ferry pilot, and it all started at a young age, and I definitely, you know, in this journey, a lot of us pilots, we want it so bad, like we want to be an airline pilot so bad that we are just so forward thinking and forward like looking, but we kind of almost forget, like, hey, like, wait, think about all the things that you've done, like, you know, for those that are pilots, think about all the check rides that you just passed, think about all the amazing flights that you've done, like, think about all the friends that you've flown and moments, even the moments where maybe you had a hard landing, you know, all these moments are just all good memories to just reflect upon and just to give yourself a pat on the back, because it is a hard journey. Like 1500 hours is a lot. It takes a while, and sometimes it feels like a marathon that just never ends. And I have my moments, you know, I call my dad or I speak to my girlfriend and I'm like, man, like it feels like a marathon that just never ends. But when you take a minute to like think and look back and think about all the stuff that you've done, it's very important to appreciate that. And just also know that all the good things are right around the corner, like Sky West in my case, and for others, a corporate job or another regional of some sort. Like it's all going to happen. It's all going to fall in place, and it's going to be amazing. It's going to be great.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I appreciate your time immensely. We're going to have to do this again after you do your I guess, IOE, is that what it's called, for Sky West?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I think there's initial training and then IOE is like, I think your initial line experience, whatever. I don't know what it stands for.
You will soon. Don't worry.
Not quite.
For sure. Well, we'll hop on again and we'll do another, we'll do a Brandon Melendez update. And, you know, again, thank you for your time today. Thank you for sharing all that. And I know that it's going to help a lot of people. So.
Hey, thank you so much, Jeff. It was great talking to you.
Thank you for tuning into the Leaders of Aviation podcast. Make sure to share this with someone you know that can benefit from this content. Remember to support this show by rating, reviewing, and subscribing.